Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson, and I am so happy to be spending the next hour with you discussing our show tonight, which is Marriage Bonds, Boundaries, and Beliefs. But before we do that, I wanted to say first, Happy Wedding Wednesday to my Twitter friends and family out there. I just want to say thank you for all the retweets that you have been doing and all the encouraging words that you've been sending. You guys are so appreciated. I also wanted to go ahead and thank and give a couple of shout-outs to a couple of my Facebook friends who've also been very supportive. The first being Gary Langer of Uncle Gary's Gourmet Peppers and Pepper Jelly. He started this wonderful, wonderful Facebook group that allows us to kind of go in and talk to one another and encourage one another. So I do want to thank you, Gary Langer, for that. And if you have a moment, go on past his page, Uncle Gary's Gourmet Peppers and Pepper Jelly. His products are excellent, especially if you like a little spice in your food. Give him a little support. He's very, very supportive of Bridal Tribe, and we do appreciate it. The second person that I want to give a shout-out to is Ian Lynn Photography. Freelance cause pictures do not lie. They also support Bridal Tribe very much. They always share what we're doing, and he was actually the photographer for a lot of the pictures that we just did this year. So again, Ian Lynn Photography, freelance, because pictures don't lie. Go by, check out his work, like his page, and Uncle Gary's Gourmet Peppers and Pepper Jelly. Thank you guys so much for all your support. Now, I'm not going to prolong what we're going to be talking about again is marriage bonds, boundaries, and belief. And we are talking with Linwood and Connie Cowan about their marriage journey. Now, this couple has a nice and interesting story as well. They met through a Penny Saver ad. I'm not even sure they still have Penny Saver ads, but they met through a Penny Saver ad. They fell in love, and they married, and they moved. And, you know, it's a beautiful story. In fact, I'm not going to prolong it anymore. I'm going to bring them right in so that they could tell you their story. Hi, Cowan.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine.
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, your story was interesting to me because you told me that you met through a Penny Saver ad, which is, I guess, equivalent to our online dating scene of today.
Exactly. That's right. The Penny Saver, we were living in Beltsville, Maryland at the time, and they have a circulation that goes out as a nonprofit circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally placed an ad, and Linwood also placed an ad. And he answered my ad.
What did he answer? First, tell me what the ad said, because you know I really want to know.
Linwood, you want to tell them what my ad said?
Okay, I don't remember the exact wording of it, but I mean, she said that she was single. She told me she was tall. She had never been married. She didn't have any children. She was Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things I was interested in.
So it was the single and tall part, or the Christian and no children?
Oh, I think she said she was pretty too.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at that part.
So that was my ad, huh? His ad, well, I remember looking for a tall, dark, and presentable Christian man, never been married, and no children. And at first, I had put an ad in once before,
mm-hmm.
but I was shortchanging myself. I knew I had other higher standards or other standards where I didn't mind if they were divorced or had been married for, you know, a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought about it to myself. I really would rather have someone who has never been married before. And so I changed it to the latter one that Linwood did answer. So
nice. So you guys met, you went out, you dated for a time. Tell me about it. And then what happened? You decided to get married, clearly, because you're 15 years in.
Yeah. You want to answer that, or you want me to answer it?
Okay. All right. So, we probably met in May of the year, that 96, and then we met a couple of times, and then we didn't really start dating until probably, like, I'm guessing September, October, and we got married like November the following year.
Nice.
So yeah, we dated. We talked on the phone for a little bit first,
right?
And then we met at a club and during the day, because I wanted to meet him during the day instead of in the evening. You know, where more people around, this social gathering.
Right, and you wanted to prove that you were tall and beautiful.
And actually, he saw me. He recognized me before I recognized him. But you know, we met and we enjoyed each other's company, and you know, we thought about being friends. And then I think we didn't go out for a while. He would ask me to go out and I wouldn't. Then when I called him to go out with me, you remember the AFRAM in Baltimore, Maryland? I needed a date, and I called him, and he told me he couldn't make it because he had other plans with someone else, and I got jealous.
Oh, no.
I got jealous because he had always approached me, but I wouldn't give in. And then when I figured, okay, well, let me give him a call, and he rejected me. So
I didn't reject you. I just had plans.
Wow.
Okay.
It was rejection.
So, and then, you know, after that, he called me, and then we went out, and then we've been going out ever since.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So you said you married in what year? I think you said 97 you guys got married.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We talked about it in, like, December.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We knew, like, in, like, December, January that we were going to get married.
So that was about, 5 or 6 months after we actually met. We knew that we wanted to be with each other. We understood that, okay, we can make this work. He wants the same things that I want, and, you know, vice versa.
Right. That is always interesting to me when people marry in what I would consider a short period of time, not that it's short for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I spoke, and I was telling you that last week's guest married 27 days after meeting.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's always scary. You know, you kind of wonder, oh, my, should we wait? Should I wait? But I think because we were more mature and understood what marriage – what we thought was marriage was like according to the word of God, we kind of knew, okay, we're not going to be playing around. This is something we both want, and we trusted each other and believed in each other that we understood marriage.
Right.
And so it didn't have to take us a long time. It was, you know.
To know that this is what you wanted and that you wanted to be together.
Exactly. He met what I wanted. I met what he wanted.
I love it.
You know.
So tonight's topic, of course, is marriage bonds, boundaries, and beliefs. Why don't you guys talk to me about the bonding period? Because once again, I mean, 6 months is a nice amount of time to get to know someone. But after you married, you know, what was the difference? What was the bonding period like?
Hmm. Well, we had a – I mean, after we got married, you know, we're together, you know, kind of all the time.
All the time.
And then, you know, I would go to the store with her and shop. Not that I do it now. but I just wanted to be with her. We hung out a lot.
We were together all the time. We weren't apart after that date. We weren't apart anymore. You know, he went to work, I went to work, and we look forward to being with each other. He lived in probably about 35, 40 minutes from me. So each evening he was my best friend. He was my company, you know, and there was no one else involved at all.
Mm-hmm.
This was the person who I hung out with, and, you know, so.
And you got married in Maryland?
We got married in Maryland. He actually proposed to me at my church. We were at a prayer breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And we were having, we were downstairs, and there was some renovation going on in the church. And he had been there before, so he wanted me to show him how it was going to look. And I'm like, you know what it's going to look like. He said, well, come show me anyway. So we went up to the sanctuary, and I was actually showing him, and he then pulled out the ring in front of the altar and asked me to marry him there.
Then what is sneaky?
I know, so that was such a pleasant surprise, and I was nervous. I got on my knees.
Oh, that's sweet. And you guys stayed in Maryland, or how did everything go?
Well, we stayed in Maryland, and we thought about waiting to get pregnant to have children. But then we realized, we're not getting any younger. We probably better go out on and get started. And sure enough, we did start trying to conceive, and we had difficulties. So I did get pregnant, but I had a miscarriage. And that just, I mean, he was there the whole time. It was just he and I. And after that, we just decided, let's move. Let's go somewhere else and, have our family. And I felt that would be great because I wanted us to be together. I didn't want any interference, any outside interference, whether it was good or bad. We understood marriage as according to the Word of God, and we wanted to live by that. Also wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and raise our children. And so we decided to move, and we had three options. One was in New York, one was in Florida, and one was here in Georgia. And the job that he has, helped us. They moved us down here to Georgia. This was the first concrete position that he got, and we moved down here to Georgia.
Right.
Nice. No, you said that you just wanted everybody out. You didn't want anybody involved in your marriage, and you felt you had to move completely out of the state to make that happen.
Well, it wasn't all about that. Also, in Maryland, it was a lot. We were looking for housing choices too. And so,
right.
And so it was a lot cheaper to live in the Georgia area than in the Washington area.
Right.
So that's where we wanted to have a house and all that. So that was a factor in the decision also.
Well, I really think that's interesting because most newlyweds, I would say, usually choose to live near friends and some family, but you guys picked up and just moved completely away to a place where, did you know anybody down there?
Didn't know a soul.
Well, I had like one cousin down here. That's about it.
But she didn't live near us.
It's
from New York to New Jersey. That's the distance. And they weren't close either. So we were here alone, really. I didn't know anyone. He didn't know anyone. He did start working again. I was a stay-at-home wife at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But he did. My husband is an introvert. So he's not one who does a whole lot of socializing. But because he knew I didn't know anyone and was here alone, he went out. He did the after-work outings with groups of people and invited me to come with them. So I got to know people at his job.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we hadn't found a church home yet either. So, that helped me to get in the realm of things instead of just being home and not having anyone to talk to. I got to know his coworkers. Yeah, so.
So stay-at-home mom in a completely new area.
Right.
He's the introvert and you are too, or?
I'm an extrovert, no. I'm the one that gets up. I'm the one that speaks up. I'm the one that talks, and I have no problem with asking questions. So it's a balance. It works,
Now, how does that happen that opposites attract that way?
I guess we kind of fill those areas where the other doesn't have. He might have to say, Connie, be quiet,
Not that often sometimes.
I'm sure he feels like it. But it's a balance, I think. And it's a good thing because if one of us don't speak up, then we'll miss opportunities. We'll miss out on so many different things because we wouldn't know. I think it's very important to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And get to know people to understand. Okay, what am I to expect in this situation or in that situation? Whereas my husband's more, he'll read something and know what's going on, but I like to, understand people, understand how is it affecting, their situation, or
right.
you know, to be able to relate to it more so. I guess I'm more of a visual and audible person than someone to, you know, read it. So.
Well, now tell me more about, because you now have two children?
Two children, two girls. One's 11 and one's 8, soon to be 9. Can't wait.
Okay. And you were telling me about the time period that you had difficulty conceiving your children and what that bonding period was like. Why don't you talk to us about that a little bit, about how you guys responded to one another during that situation?
Well, again, I did have the first miscarriage when we were in Maryland. Not that we still had a whole lot of support, but he was always there then. And then it took us about 2 years. To conceive, we found the doctor. My husband met someone on his job who gave us a name to a gynecologist, and we met with her, and she was actually just starting out. So she's like, well, we're going to get you a baby. And it took us about 2 years. I took fertility drugs, and finally I got pregnant. But again, unfortunately, I had a miscarriage. And the whole time, every single day, every single office visit, doctor's appointment, and everything, Limit was right there with me. It was like he was pregnant too. So, you know, he was going through, you know, whatever withdrawals that I may have had. There was never any, he doesn't have time for this or anything. He was always there. And we had each other. There was no one else to interfere or to give their input to, you know, say what to do here or there. It was just Limit and myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I so appreciate that, and there was no other way. It was kind of great.
Figuring out together.
Yeah.
So,
you know, finally I got pregnant, and unfortunately I miscarried again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was another setback, but again, he was still there. We never gave up. We just... I guess that helped us bond even more so and embrace each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, he was feeling, a lot of times I guess people don't feel like the father goes through what the mother goes through, but I saw in him how it bothered him too. So
yeah, it was a bad time for both of us, and we would talk about it and try to come to some rational understanding what's going on or trying to just cope.
Trying to, and also trying to decipher, okay, are we not to have children? What is going on? Why the miscarriage? Maybe this was at the time that God felt like, yeah, continue bonding right now. You're not ready to raise a child. So those things we considered, we thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And so although it was devastating to have another miscarriage, it was always also knowing that God has a plan for us.
Right.
So, and then finally I did get pregnant again, and I had to stay on complete bed rest. From after the first trimester, they'll put you on bed rest.
Right.
Around the 20th week or so.
Yeah. And so complete bed rest, that means the only time I was supposed to get up is to go to the bathroom or go get my food out of the kitchen that my husband prepared for me.
Right, right.
So, and no, we didn't have company come over. I did, you know, invite my mom to come down to stay with me.
Right.
For a couple of months. She doesn't work or anything, so I thought that would be a good idea. But it wasn't until later that she came down. So we kind of went through it ourselves, and but our doctors were wonderful. And, you know, Limit was right there. Every single officer, I had to go see a high specialist doctor and
high-risk
doctor, as well as my regular gynecologist. So I look forward to it, whereas many people don't look forward to doing that. But I did because I was on bed rest, and that was the time for me to get out.
So when baby came, how did that change your marriage? How did that enhance your marriage? And what was the learning curve for that when it's just the two of you? So now the bonding period is still happening, and then you're starting to learn each other more and what your boundaries are when it came to raising children, when it came to living together. I mean, before the children came, I mean, you know how they they say that some couples have the argument that they would rather you squeeze the toothpaste from the bottom than the middle.
That was a new one for me.
Well, after we had our first child, and that was great, and you know, cause we got to love the baby together. But then, like probably like when she got around a year and a half or so, she became, you know, as children do, they get a little more mischievous, and so then, kind of we had to kind of talk about how to chastise her, because we didn't really agree on all that initially. But then, you know, we kind of came to some common ground.
You mean when it came to children?
Excuse me?
You mean when it came to disciplining the child?
Right.
As well as just different ways of bringing up a child. You know, I'm from a family. My mom raised us alone. I have five sisters and brothers, cousins, nieces, and nephews all around. Mom having daycare, you know, so I'm around kids a lot. I understood my way. Whereas Linwood, he didn't have it like that. He didn't.
Right, and my family, I had my mother and father both there, and so I had a different structure than she did.
He has one brother. I have three sisters and two brothers. And again, I have a big family, so I understood raising babies, changing diapers and stuff. So I did that too. Whereas Linwood didn't do that. So his ideas or his views were different from mine. But we came to compromising. But like any parent, you don't want anyone to say you're not doing something right, you know, especially when you're thinking, you read yours from a book. I've experienced this.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, so.
You actually said that to him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because I was the person like, well, I read, because I did read a lot of child care books, and I'm like, okay, this person says this, you know, and like, well, they don't know what they're talking about, you know, but, you know, but it was all good, you know.
And one incident was when Nadia was probably about 8 months old, and I think that we recognized her first cold. Limo brought it to me, and said, I think Nadia has a cold, yeah. And so I'll say, oh, okay, because I didn't recognize it. So he heard her, you know, breathing. So he wanted to put saline solution up her nose.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to put that up her nose because I didn't want her to drown or anything.
I can imagine that would panic me, too.
And, yeah, so he's reading it and stuff and saying, it's okay, you can put this up the baby's nose. I'm like, no, I'll give her some medicine and let them break that up for her. But, you know, that was like a disagreement that we had, but we came to compromise, and he knew what to do with that. But I couldn't do it, so.
Wow. All right, so you had your disagreements when it came to raising children. And then you mentioned that you realized that you both had different types of backgrounds.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me more about that, because you said you had a big family. You came from a single-parent home.
Right.
He came from a two-parent home. And what were the rules like in your houses? Because when I talk to some couples, some of the things that they say was in their home, no one really taught them or spoke to them about how to choose a mate.
For me, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think we didn't really talk about that in my household either. Where did they talk about how to choose a mate? I mean, no.
He was a little boy.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I did not have that. I didn't. When I never really identified a father figure. I have uncles, but they were at a distance because my mom did. You know, she may have had a boyfriend or something, but. They would come to see us, but as far as saying who you should and should not date or anything, or what you should look for in a man, I did not have that. But I saw my sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles dating, and I knew growing up with that that I didn't want my life to be like that. I wanted to have a husband before I had children. I wanted to. Wanted him to want children as I wanted children, and we grow together and do this thing. Where I came from, we had a lot of people having babies out of wedlock, you know, and I'm not knocking them or anything, but that was more of a struggle, I thought, for them, because they may have been going to school and got pregnant, and then they had to raise their children on their own. And I knew I didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I envisioned what I wanted in a man.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted, you know, that role. I wanted to get married first. I wanted my husband to help me with the children, you know, help raise the children and all, instead of just doing it all by myself. It can be such a struggle. But I remember before I even got married, I thought I'm probably never going to find that type of person. And so I thought about adopting a child, because I did want to have children. So I thought, well, I'll adopt a child. And it wasn't until where I was working, one of my coworkers' wife was the director over the adoption or foster parenting.
Mm-hmm.
So the foster parenting area. And he didn't think that I should be doing that. And I was not able to get into that class.
Mm-hmm.
So, it, you know, it just went all different ways as far as what my upbringing was like. But I knew that I didn't want to stay in the situation that I was in. I know that a lot of times people get caught up in, I always call it being stuck in the muck and not exploring. I wanted to get out and see what else is going on outside of this zip code.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then what?
Okay.
Your upbringing, how things were.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So, my wife, she was born in, grew up in a city. I grew up in, like, a small suburban city, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so where we live, it was very boring, I guess you'd say, compared to the city life. And it was boring to us because it was fun, you know, but
because in the cities you have to come home by the...
Huh?
I said, yeah, in the city you have to come home when the street lights go off.
That's right. And, you know, the street lights go on. Come on, it's time to go home, you know. We couldn't be out late at night, you know. And because, you know, people get in trouble in the suburbs just like they do in the city. But but most of our family, we had several aunts and uncles in the city we lived in. And so we would visit them a lot, and, you know, and the family was close-knit, even though our own family only had two children. But, you know, to us that wasn't out of the ordinary.
It was out of the ordinary for me, because where I came from, there weren't many couples who had children together. So, you know, I'm straight from the hood. I grew up, and this is what I knew. This was what it is.
Right.
So it
we lived in the same house. I mean, the house I was born in is the house I left when I went out to college. You know, so it's not like we didn't move or anything. It was very stable, pretty much.
See, we moved like maybe 5 times. We're all still in the same zip code, though. We knew people around the corner. We got on our bikes, and it was not an issue for us to go skating or riding a bike and go like 10 blocks over and knowing people there. You know, the whole neighborhood knew each other. We went to camp together. Their parents, we knew each other. We went to, you know, stay away camps together, weeks at a time. So it was, we were more free, open to go into each other's homes and stuff, and cousins around the corner. It was always there, you know. Someone was always there.
How does that affect how you raise your children now? I mean, do they have the cousins? Do you guys agree or disagree to allow them to be explorers the way you were, Connie, or... How do you co-parent together to make this work within everything that you've learned as single people and then married people?
Okay, well, since we are like we said, away from family members, so that
kind of helps
as far as the decision on that. And we didn't really, since we didn't know a lot of people here. They didn't do a lot of sleepovers when they were younger and those sorts of things.
They didn't do any sleepovers.
Okay, I said a lot.
Yeah, but our kids are homebodies. They desire to go out because they've always just been in the house with us. I mean, we didn't deprive them of that or anything.
Well, they weren't just in the house. But.
Well, when we did things, we do things as a family.
Yeah.
And if they went over to a friend's house, which is very rare, I would normally go with them and maybe stay for an hour or two and come back. But they enjoyed that. That's what they know. They don't have cousins and stuff here. We never had a babysitter. We always did that ourselves. If we couldn't go out. We didn't go out anywhere unless we took the kids with us, including our anniversary dates. There was no one here to babysit, and we didn't know people well enough to trust them to watch our children. And as far as the way I was able to just go out and walk the street and go sit with Aunt Bessie or Miss Loretta, who's across the street, our kids don't do that today. I don't know if it's just because of, the way society is now with the crimes and all, but most kids stay inside now. You know, they're inside playing computers and all. So our kids, you know, when they want to go to the playground, unlike myself, unlike my parents, we drive them to the play area, to the playground, to enjoy themselves, or take them to a gym to go swimming or something, or they get recess in school. But that's what they know, and they enjoy life. But that also helps them be of a bond with us, too. They love being with us. They want us to be around them.
So. All right. Well, you and I spoke when we were discussing this topic about being a stay-at-home mom and what that was like when the husband works out of the home for the majority of the time. We talked about how do you keep your romance alive? How does he respond to you differently? I mean, you said that you used to work all the time and you were a little more independent, so it was kind of a shift for you to become a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
Talk to me about that.
And again, this is something that we agreed that I would stay home with the kids while he would go to work. And I got used to it, but there were times where I'd get lonely. I'm just talking to kids now, and I want to go out sometime. And I'm thinking to my husband, let's go out and do something else. But he was, he couldn't see it like that. So, I got used to it. He would go off to work. I trusted him. I didn't think that he wanted to be at work just because when he come home to me, he see me with my house robe on and hair and hair rollers or not getting myself presentable for him, whereas when he goes to work, he see other women like that. But I trusted, I knew and understood that he loves me and he would never go that route or anything. So those things can easily go through a woman's mind when they're home taking care of the babies and cleaning the home and their husband is away at work seeing women who are fixed up with perfume on and their earrings on and, just throughout the day, But I never worried about that. I never had an inkling that he may desire to be at work more because of the pleasantness of the women around him.
And you're 15 years in now. I think we also discussed something about listening to other people. There was a time in your marriage where you were listening to what other people had to say about what happens either after 5 years or 7 years.
That 7-year itch.
It's in the magazine, yeah.
Well, I felt that, I think that around that time is when we started having more controversy. And I felt that, this is my personal feeling, that he knows that this is that time frame going around that maybe he's looking into that or thinking things normally start happening in relationships around this time frame. And so any little thing that may come up, it may cause us to overanalyze it.
So were you overanalyzing during your 7th year of marriage that one of you might overthink or overanalyze the 7-year itch with what people call the 7-year itch?
I know I didn't. I mean, I'd read different marriage articles in different magazines, and you know, and how people relate to each other. But I wasn't looking for any bumps. Or
it seemed like it came into play, and I'm like, oh wow, this is the time that people start thinking it's been 7 years, so things could start going wrong. And so I guess it was in my mind to think that he's feeling that way too. So any little thing may come up, we nitpick at it.
Mm.
Remember, we went to see the pastor because we were having some issues.
Yeah, it was a disagreement we had. Yeah.
Right, which was really nonsense, you know. And so that, I was thinking, oh, man, so is that 7 year? Is something going to start happening? Is that really a myth or, you know, does it really happen in relationships and stuff? And so I guess the fear kind of set in and we kind of almost fell into what society believed. Instead of understanding what we had together, you know, sure, we get into arguments and stuff, but it was never a moment where we decided, we thought that we would break up or anything like that. So.
Right. No, I didn't get that feeling from you at all. I just like that you mentioned that sometimes in a marriage, when the fifth or seventh year comes up and people start just thinking about what the world normally says about those time frames,
yeah.
You were saying that, you know, you shouldn't let things dictate your marriage. You shouldn't let other worldly beliefs or just others, you know, TV, magazines, whatever, you shouldn't allow that to dictate your marriage, that you know each other. When you know each other, you have to then increase the communication between.
Exactly. I think that is one of the main issues main problems that people have in their relationship. They listen to what society says or what other people say, not knowing what their situation is. We're all different people. So what it may have happened in that marriage, but that's not who we are. And just because it happens during that time frame doesn't mean it's going to happen to us because we are stronger than that. We know what we wanted. We know that we love each other and want to be with each other. And so no one or anyone else or anything can come between us because it's important that we be together.
Right.
And what are some of the things that anchor your marriage? Let's talk about that. You did mention communication being one of the big ones. In fact, I believe you said it was one of your boundaries.
Right.
You
have to communicate with me. If you don't communicate with me, then it's going to cause issues. And so I will ask questions, and I think it's very important. I think he owes it to me to share any, you know, whatever's going on in his life. You know, I'm not trying to nitpick at his brain and know every single thing. Oh, you know, I think that if I had a question about something, because I wanted to know that, why not share that with me? Why not tell me? Including his feelings about a situation that may have occurred. You got to let me know. You have to talk to me about it. Otherwise, you know, what do we have if we don't have the communication?
Right. Sometimes, communication has come up as an issue. Like, I don't always talk about everything I might be thinking about. The kind of, not that I'm trying to hold anything, it just didn't seem important enough to talk about, you know, or like it was an issue or something. So that's something I have been trying to get better at. And I'm not really good at it, but it's important to talk, and so that.
And with that being said, if I had not voiced my opinion about that or shared with him, you got to talk to me, you know, then that would have been a lack of communication. And then, you know, we would just build that wedge between us.
Right. And so she would have been wanting more communication. I'm thinking everything's okay. Then, you know, it would.
Right.
So you have to talk and so that everybody feels comfortable with going on.
Exactly, because I can't read his mind, and
right.
if he doesn't share with me, then I can only assume, and when I assume, I have to, you know, I go with that because that's
right.
All I have. You're not talking to me,
right,
okay?
Right.
So then he might get upset because I'm doing my thing. I'm like, well, this is what I have to do because you won't share it with me,
right?
So, and
right.
then that can cause conflict. So that's why communication is a must. You have to communicate. You know, we have kids now,
mm-hmm.
and they recognize, you know, when there's conflict.
So how did you cross that line, or how did you get past that when it comes to respecting the characteristics of your spouse? I know we also kind of got into that a little bit about you knew that he was more on the quiet, introverted side and you were a lot more outspoken. What are the important things or the beliefs that you two have discussed together about communicating and the things that you want to hear about versus the things that, you know, that you're okay that he kind of keeps to himself or at least communicates that he's not ready to talk about it?
Well, you said that we just have to respect each other's, you know, the way we feel about things. Some things he just don't understand to mention or just think that it's not important. That's his nature. That's what he thinks. I don't want to give him so much, I guess, leeway to go that route because, again, communication is very important. If he feels that this isn't important, he has to respect the fact that I need to understand that. So I respect the fact that, you know, he's the way he is, and I try not to overdo it, but at the same time, you know, he has to respect me, too, because he knows how I am. I am an expert. I like to know what's going on. I am the planner. I'm the one who, you know, stay at home with the kids and stuff. And if you're not going to share with me that, you know, we don't have to go, we don't have to leave for the vacation until midnight, and I'm thinking we're going to leave at noon, you got to communicate that to me, you know. So the only, you know, way I can respect them for not sharing that information with me is just to understand that he's just an introvert and he does have it up in his mind. He's an intelligent man and he knows what, you know, how that course is going to run. If that makes any sense to you.
Well, I mean, I do want to know more about, I mean, what kind of conversation did you have? If you're speaking to other newlyweds who are listening to you tonight about who might have similar traits and characteristics to the both of you, the introvert and the extrovert, what kind of things did you talk about? What did you overcome? You know what I mean? What can you share with someone who is about to travel the same road as you have already traveled about getting to that place of now understanding each other? How did you come to understand each other better?
I think that most importantly, he knows that I'm not going to take anything away from him. I'm not going to do anything to hurt our relationship. It's all for the better for us to know what's going on in each other's head or what we're, you know, what is it that we're trying to do. So that's important. When we first met, when we got together, we talked about everything.
Mm-hmm.
We understood everything. And as we got older, we're growing. We still need to know what you're thinking about. You know,
we never had any kind of like, well, I would call hard and set rules about things to discuss. I mean, like, if Connie asks me something, I'll tell her anything she wants to talk about, you know, or same other way around. But, and if I ask her something, she'll answer it, you know. But there's no, I don't feel we've had any least written rules. I mean, nothing's written down, or we sat down and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. It wasn't like that. It was kind of like evolved, you know.
Right, so you guys just were always in agreement about everything and how you were going to do everything.
No, we were not.
No.
No, we were not. I think that you have to be able to communicate. When you first meet with someone, you're communicating. All right, and when it starts lacking, you can't wonder, but well, why isn't he going to share this with me, or why isn't she going to share that with me? The important thing is we both need to be comfortable with our lifestyle. Okay, so it's important to me to know, he has to know that I need this, Mm-hmm. And so it's up to him to oblige to make me feel comfortable and vice versa.
All right.
So if you're not going to communicate with me, then what am I supposed to do? I mean, that's where respect come in at also. You have to know that your spouse loves you.
Right, and you don't want
make
to say any
comfortable.
Yeah.
Right. Why not share that? What's the big deal? What's wrong with sharing how you feel? So, you know, skip that drama and just say it because she wants to know anyway. It's not going to hurt anybody.
Right, but, I mean, we do understand that that's not always very easy, especially for men, from what I understand, from what I've been told. It's not always easy for men to communicate what's on their mind. And if what you're saying is true about you, too, about being introvert and extrovert, I can just imagine that, you know, you've had a number of conversations about these are the things that I need from you. This is I need for you to say this for me. I need you to do this.
Okay, here's some terms of endearment. Okay, we're at the stage now. Well, we were at the stage now. Then he wasn't telling me anything. Okay, and that's where I'm talking about as far as like I'm the stay at home mom. He goes off to work and he sees this. Well, I sometimes needed to hear him tell me, "Oh, you look beautiful," or "You smell good." Okay, that perfume you have on, I really like it. He was not doing that. And so I shared with him, honey, you need to tell me. I need you to tell me, you know, instead of me asking you, how does this look, when you see me put on a new dress or something, say, oh, that looks nice. Tell me these things. When he doesn't, when he wouldn't tell me these things, I'm going out and buying another dress because that one didn't do the job. You know, and so, and same thing with perfume. I have so much perfume. He never says, oh, that smells good, you know. And he wasn't telling me that. And so it got to a point where, you know what, I'm getting tired of this. I have told you I need to hear these things from you. Sure, people out in the street tell me, but you're my husband. I need to hear that from you. I really believe you think that this dress is pretty, or I believe that you think that I smell good, but something's holding you back, and you're not telling me that. So if you continue to do that, I have to set my mindset. I have to get myself in mind to be able to deal with the fact that he's not going to tell me and be all right with the way I look. I'm not a bad-looking person. I know that. But it's always good to hear that from my husband.
Right,
and he wasn't doing that. And so I did. I put myself in a mind frame to not expect him to give me these terms of endearment.
And how did you feel about that, Lynn, when you're actually okay with that?
No, I mean, actually, when she told me about that, I was like, I was kind of in a shock, and I didn't expect that
it to be that important to me or something.
Well, she needed to hear it so much.
But it is.
I never gave you the negative.
You didn't, but you never verbalized anything. It was almost like, oh, just blase, blase to you. So I needed to hear it, and I kept telling you that. And so then when he did start telling me that, it was kind of too late because it actually just happened just a couple of days ago. He said, we got into an argument about it. I said, you never, he said, I said, how come you didn't tell me how I look or something like that?
And what I said is the last time we had this discussion,
when I said
something nice, you just brush it off like, yeah, 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 yeah. So I'm like, I'm just wasting my breath.
Well, because I told you that because I had to keep telling you this, at this point, when you say it, I'm going to think you just saying it because I had to tell you
right.
to say these things to me.
Right.
And so I put myself in that mold.
Right.
And that's what happens when you know, to me, that was, I don't know, I didn't understand if he was deliberately not telling me that I looked nice or my hair looked good, or was he just really oblivious that to, you know, to the fact that I needed to hear those things. So, and I took that,
the negative route.
I thought, well, he's not going to tell me this, so I'm not going to expect it anymore. If he tell me, it's only because I told him to tell me. So that doesn't work.
Right, because that doesn't make it feel genuine from
me. Right.
That's the word I'm looking for. You know, it wasn't genuine.
Right, so.
Linwood. Go on.
So my goal is for her to believe that it's genuine. To say it enough so that she doesn't seem
like it. Like it's made up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, let me talk with this, and she'll hear it today.
Uh-oh.
You know? So now here I have all this perfume and all these clothes.
Right.
And he's the one that goes to work, you know?
Yeah.
So he's buying all this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what about your compliments to him? I'm getting a question from someone on Facebook about they actually heard the same thing from their wife, and they said, do you say these kinds of things to him? Are you gentle with his ego? Do you do to him what you expect from him?
I sure do. I let him know, oh, honey, you look nice. Oh, I love that suit. It may be the same suit. Like, you look nice. We're going to church in the morning. Or especially when he wears a certain color, I love to see him in, like, all black or something.
Not that often.
Please. Sometimes he's getting ready for work, and you know how I'm going to wake up. The alarm clock's going off, and I wake up, and I'm like, oh, no, honey, you can't wear that to work, you know. Put something else on. So, I tell him if I like something or I don't like something, all so that he could be more presentable. Remember, in my ad, I want someone who was presentable.
And you still want it to be presentable 15 years later.
Exactly. And, I mean, I bought him cologne because I thought it smelled good, and he'll wear it. And I say, oh, honey, you smell good.
And I bought you perfume.
But do you say, oh, honey, you smell good?
Oh, yes, I have, honey.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on.
See?
Let's be real.
Uh-oh.
So, Linwood, you had a little trouble picking up on the signals that she was giving you, that she needed these kind of compliments from you, especially, of course, being, you know, a stay-at-home mom. I'm sure that she doesn't
hear
from anyone except you.
Right.
So you had a little trouble picking up on the signals.
Yes, I did. But I'm trying to get back on the corrected path.
And he is a very good man, and I love him to death, and I know that he's that type of person. But in the beginning, I didn't have to ask him to do those things. It's just over the years, he stopped.
So he'll keep
that going. Yeah, we grow, we get bigger or smaller, and, you know, our features change a little bit. Our hair gets older. You know, we wear it different ways. We still need that to keep going, you know. We're still supposed to make each other feel the best that we are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I expect that. And, you know, he may not expect that, so I have to respect him for that. But we have each other, and we're in this marriage. It's not a struggle for me to be married to him at all, and I don't ever want it to be. So we have to do everything that we possibly can to make each other feel worthy or feel like, you're the best thing in the world to me. And, you know.
Well, I want to hear from Linwood a little bit about this when it comes. Was there something that you needed? Was there anything that you felt you needed to communicate with her about when it came to your needs?
I was talking too much, wasn't I?
No.
I know I can talk a lot. I'm going on and on.
Not at all.
Well, I mean, Connie's a great wife and mother. And I mean, I know at one point I did complain to her a little bit about the house.
I told her I didn't like to clean up.
And so I'm like, okay, you know. And I didn't feel fair. It was fair to me to go to work and then come home and clean up. I'm not down with that. So
don't forget, I do have two children, and I'm very active in their schools. And I also volunteer at different locations and stuff.
Right, and I've helped clean her up sometimes. And I didn't say this yet, but when they were younger, like Connie said, she was stay-at-home mom, and they were pretty much running her ragged. But these are like...
8 and 11 years old now. They're almost self-autonomous in some ways. So they don't need as much guidance or care.
But they're older now. They're older now, and they mess up more. I mean,
okay.
So, and I would let him know, I did straighten up. It's
right.
Just as soon as I straighten up, they mess back up. So I got
you're
to
right.
a point where,
you're
forget
right.
it.
That did happen.
You know,
yeah.
And he doesn't understand it because he's not home with them. Now we're in a whole other realm,
okay?
Because he, you know, a man at work can't understand what we actually go through, you know, raising children. It's not really that hard, but they need, I have to think for them as well, fix their food, do their hair, put their clothes on, take them wherever they need to go. And I'm last, you know. So when I clean up this house and then they throw their toys or clothes or whatever all around again and I'm yelling at them to pick it up, I expect them to, but they don't. And so when he come home, he see the house a mess. And instead of him giving them direction to help straighten up or whatever, he's looking at me or twisting his mouth up and may not even say anything but have an attitude about it. You know, I'm like, who? You know, hey, I'm tired.
Okay.
So I told you that's a whole nother story. But ultimately, I know that he loves me, and he knows that I love him. And so we do what we can to make each other feel good. We get into our little arguments here or there, and then we get to a point where, okay. Do you want me to talk to you? Do you want me to talk to you this week? You know, because you get tired of it. And we know we're going to be together.
Right. We do know that.
Well, how does your spirituality play a role in your marriage? Because I know you said that you definitely got together and you understood the definition of marriage by biblical definition.
Well, actually, before we got married, the church, we went to separate churches. At his church, they had
a marriage encounter group.
A marital encounter group, and
we went to that their meeting.
They allowed us
engaged,
to come
as an engaged couple,
right? But normally it was a wedding, and normally it was they were all married couples,
right?
From different walks of life, different types, whether the age group, like you had senior citizens who were married 70 years, or well, say 30 years. And then you may have had a couple who was married, maybe senior citizens who have only been married 10 years. You had a couple who were married with children, some married without children. So you had different groups there, different couples there who shared, you know, just what their experiences were, how they lived their life, with the things that they do. And they allowed us to come in and be a part of this group knowing that we were getting married.
And it was biblically based. And they had a book they would go through, and they would have a discussion about the different topics every week.
Exactly. And each week that we had a session, a couple would lead that.
Right.
And basically share how they dealt with that subject matter. And it was good to hear, you know, different things that other couples go through as a married couple, which we know that as life go on, we're going to come across some things that may be so challenging, and then we'll remember, you know, it's doable. We can handle that. This is what this couple did. So you kind of... I listen, I hear, we hear, and we know that it can, you know, it doesn't have to be bad. It's just working through it. It's going to come. It happened in so many different people's lives. We just have to know how or understand what are we going to do to get past it. So, and also we are in church. You know, we go to church and we have a spiritually based family. Every,
mm-hmm.
You know. Every Sunday morning, we make sure we have breakfast together and we do our devotions and read scripture and talk about anything. We make sure our kids understand who their Lord and Savior is, and that's a part of our life, and it's very important to us.
So it is one of the things that kind of anchors your marriage. I like what you're saying that you have breakfast together, that you actually take some time and set it aside.
Mm-hmm.
To do the things that you do. So you actually still set aside time to discuss things and have conversations about communication or about something that may have happened that you didn't bring up before. This is something that you still do.
Well, yeah, we about as far as our devotion and alert, you know, understanding, you know, what are we supposed to do as Christians, whether it be, you know, as a married couple or as parents or just everyday life, we make sure, you know, we have that open for Sunday mornings. And then sometimes, once Lynn and I got to a point where we were going through, I think it was some type of magazine or marital thing, we would get together Saturday.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, just go over and talk about our feelings or how we're perceiving each other. It's I can't remember the name of the book or whatever.
Yeah, it was a book about relationship and marriage. It just had question and answer sessions, and it would answer, read the questions and answer them together, separately and compare answers and discuss each other's answers.
And it,
okay.
it would help our communication.
Right.
You know? And so based on the answers, I know you've heard like Myers-Briggs test. At the end of each chapter, I think, you know, after you read it, this question and answer, and we separately will answer those questions. And then we come together and answer the questions or share our answers to compare them. Oh, okay, so this is where we are. This is what I say. And it helps us get to know each other a lot better. So,
well, now tell me this, I want us to end the show with this. Because I normally do ask married couples to, if you had 5 pieces of advice to give to a newlywed couple after the 15 years that you've been married, what would your top 5 pieces of advice be?
Well, I would tell you, I would say, tell your spouse you love them every day. that would be good. Just every day. Just
right.
Say,
and that's one thing he does
don't,
too.
Don't go without saying that.
Right. He does tell me that all the time that he loves me. And I tell him that too.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I know that in usually at like bridal showers or something, I usually give the advice like there's gonna be times where for instance like our communication issue, he may only give 10% in that relationship, but it's supposed to be 100%, so I may have to go to 80% and just bite that bullet and go it on and understand, well, he's just, you know, he's not going to give me those terms of endearment or what, but I still have to give that 80% to complete that 10% that he's giving, and
well,
vice versa.
Oh, you mean just for different things? So there's 80% that you have to give some time, and then
exactly. There's
80% he has to give some time, depending
exactly.
on the situation.
Exactly. It's not always going to be equal. You're going to have to go that extra mile. You're going to have to bend over backwards a little further to make it work. And so, you know, I'm not better than him where I can't meet his needs. We have to just, you know, I may have to go a little more. I may only be given 10% of this, and so he needs to step it up and fill that. That's what we both should have, because we want it so much.
Okay, so then you're saying that one advice, of course, is to tell your spouse that you love them every day. Another piece would be to be able to step up sometimes where your spouse may not be giving enough.
Exactly. I may have to just jump in there. You know, I'll have to put that. I'll have to take care. If I'm not cleaning this house up and it's bothering him, I'm not giving all that I need to in that relationship, because this is our home. And so he may come in and take care of that for me and do that for me, whereas I'm not meeting him halfway. He's going to work every day, and then he has to come home and clean up. So I need to step it up some.
Also, I think like after you have an argument, you're not always going to be able to do it, but sometimes, it's, you know, be the one to give in, even though you may not think it's your fault. You know, you may think you're in the right, but just you know,
be the one to apologize, because
be the one to apologize.
The relationship
is
worth more than the argument, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, you just can't. But if you,
just try. Try to apologize, even though you think it's not your fault. Because that's
okay.
The end argument.
Yeah, we may be so stubborn, like, no, I'm not going to give in to that. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other person needs to just, you know, is not meeting them halfway, but it's like, okay, I'm going to take care of this. It's going to be all right. And then it'll be well-rounded. And it's going to be a time where he, you know, it'd be the opposite way. Everything is not going to be equal. I can't bring it 50%, and he can't bring it 50%. He may only be able to bring 10%. So I got to take it at other 90%. You know what I mean?
Nothing's
okay.
50-50.
Exactly.
Wow.
So don't
be stupid about an apology. Two more. Give me two more.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. How about
pray together. That's something that's good to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And respect each other. You have to respect each other.
Yeah.
You know? And I know a lot of times there are people who are out in public and may get to their argument or whatever and, you know, may start airing dirty laundry or whatever. What goes on in your household stays in your household. Everyone else doesn't need to know all of your business.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, and it may be excruciating to you, but I don't call my mom and tell her everything what's going on, and he doesn't tell his mom everything what's going on, because certainly they're going to take sides.
Right.
Even though my family take his side over mine, you know, but people will take things and turn it around. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, we tell our kids what goes on in our house stays in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. Even if he upset me, you don't need to go run tell your sister or your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep it. You know, some things, yeah, you're going to share it. It's natural.
Right.
But if there's something, an issue, some people love to see you break up. I know before we got married, there were people who were saying, oh, that's not going to work.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, and we knew what we wanted. We understood marriage. We both understand it the same way. Even though some people understand marriage, it's not the same. They have their own idea of marriage. And if you don't communicate, of course you won't understand that, oh, he was thinking marriage was some other way. No, we understand it the same according to the word of God, and we try and live our life based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is very important. I think that's the most important thing, to make sure that when you do get married or when you plan to marry that person who you think is someone, make sure they understand marriage the same way you understand it.
That is an excellent piece of advice, I think, because I think that is something that is overlooked by a lot of couples. Sometimes you just get so caught up in the honeymoon phase.
Oh, yeah.
Of everything that you really did not have a discussion or at least a direct discussion about what you believe marriage to be. You know, people just kind of glaze over it, or you know how some guys are. They'll give you the interview without telling you that's exactly where they're going with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
They give you the interview, but they're not having a truly open conversation about their beliefs about marriage and asking you about your beliefs about marriage. So I think mm-hmm. that is an excellent piece of advice, to make sure that what you think about marriage is what they think about marriage, and that you're both in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, we, you know what, we're gonna go
Can
ahead.
Can I give
and
you one more?
Absolutely.
Just one more.
Yes.
Remember that we do change. We get older.
Uh-huh.
When you marry someone, you're in it for the long haul. Yeah, we're gonna get older. Life changes. Situations in society change.
Mm-hmm.
We have to expect that we're going to have to deal with things that we have never, ever dealt with before. This
mm-hmm.
is your spouse. When you marry that person, you, regardless of whatever situation it is, this is the one who you love, and you are willing to go that mile. You're willing to just accept whatever is going to take place in our lives when we get older. You love them so much, you're going to want to be there for them. And that's
mm-hmm.
is inevitable. You can't help that. Life changes, and we all change. So, yeah, we're going to grow older. We're going to become more mature. So, you know, this is what we're dealing with, and this is who I said I want to spend the rest of my life with. They're not going to stay 25 or 32 for the rest of their life.
Right.
They're going to get older, and their body is going to start to ache, you know. And so, honey, you love me. You said for better or for worse. We're at that point now where – I need you to help push me out this bed to go to the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
No, she doesn't need that yet, but she's saying one day it may come.
Exactly. And so because he knows that life doesn't stand still. I'm going to need you to be to support me when we get older, too.
Right.
Okay, so there.
You want to be able to make sure that when you're getting married, that you consider the future and you consider that things do change.
Exactly.
With the person that you marry, and that your commitment should not change, even though, you know, you will.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, this has been Tribal Wisdom with Bridal Tribe. I'm so happy that we had Linwood and Connie Cowan on discussing their journey with marriage and everything that they shared with us today. So we're going to say good night. Please remember that we are Bridal Tribe and we are dedicated to love. We will see you next Wedding Wednesday at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. Good night.